Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming. Well, at least I usually am, but you know, MLW is taking weeks off at a time now, so we're just doing other stuff, so I have something special popping up. But first, I do want to talk about one piece of news. It has been announced that MLW is heading to Australia this coming late summer, early fall, however you want to look at it, as MLW and Oceania Pro Wrestling are teaming up for a series of events over a course of a weekend, August 30th to September 1st. MLW has previously announced a partnership with Oceania Pro, and of course, like the New Japan relationship or the CMML relationship. I just kind of like, well, that's cool. Like, we'll get to see some new international talent on the screen, but is it really a talent exchange? Well, it looks like this one is actually going to be it. I'm going to eat some crow on that one. So they are having the Gold Rush series, a competitive interpromotional series of battles, if you will. Who will come out on top? I don't know. Is there going to be a trophy? There better be a trophy. I want an Oceania trophy or whatnot. But they are noting that titles will be on the line at these various contests. So we're actually kind of curious to see what's going to happen over there in the meanwhile. So MLW is going to Australia later this year, putting that $20 million they recently got to good use. All right, so, as I said, no MLW this week, and I got something that I have in the vault. Well, hasn't been in the vault terribly long, just got it done up thanks to Intimidation Games running into my work schedule, if you will. What I got is Feline Phenomenal. No, not doing that. Plenty of Energy. Okay, yeah, we're getting cringe. Who I have with me is Midwestern Independent Wrestling standout, the Feline Phenom, JT Energy. He is a Grand Slam champion in SCW Pro, which of course I'm one of the internet champions of. And by internet champion, I don't mean like a title belt. I mean like rah, 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 head cheerleader kind of dude. But is also active throughout the state of Iowa, and he's popped up on Raw and AEW television a time or two. So, like, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and surprisingly, we barely scratched the furniture on this one. Like, he's got to come back, and we make reference to that just because there's so much stuff that we talked about that there's so much more we could dig into. So, let's get an energy drink, and then come back with my talk with JT Energy. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Raise Energy for that pickup. Raise comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently, Italian Ice, which is great, by the way. And it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So also, be like Cass, drink Raise Energy. All right, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Special edition of MLW Confusion. Today, I have a guest with me, SCW Pro Grand Slammer, if I'm not mistaken. He is the Feline Phenom. He is JT Energy. JT, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well, and there's a lot of truth to what you just said. I am a Grand Slam champion in SCW Pro. There is very few things that I have not done there, but we still have some bucket list items to get to. So my world of SCW Pro is far from done. And now I'm excited to be here for the first time on the MLW Confusion podcast.
Well, it's great having you on, and not just to blow smoke up you, but you're one of my wife's favorite local guys. So,
oh,
like, I'm okay. I'm earning brownie points for doing this, by the way, as she hides away. Okay, she's not in the house right now, so it's fine. But she might come in later, probably not. She respects the closed door behind me.
Sure.
But yeah, we got a whole list of things we can talk about. Before we really touch on the wrestling, though, we'll get there because this is a wrestling podcast. But I wanted to touch upon your handles, social media handles, the DJ Click and Play. For those who aren't aware of JT's social media, he's sometimes FKA DJ Click and Play, other times he's just DJ Click and Play. Where did that come from?
So DJ Click and Play is my social media handle that I jumped on forever ago, because when I was going to Iowa State University, one of my hobbies and my pastimes was actually DJing at the local college bars. If you want to go and have a good time, there's plenty of places to do it in Ames. Not as many nowadays as there used to be. I have driven through that town and it has changed greatly, but there are still some places where I used to throw down the beats that move the feats. DJ Click and Play was in the house on a Friday or Saturday night. And when I first started to hop into the realm of playing music, it was very basic clicking and playing. So at the time I was dating a bartender, and while she was throwing the drinks to our friends, sometimes we would get a big group of people to go out, and it was kind of like the same tired, boring playlist that you would hear over and over, right? Someone would just set something up and it would go. And you, when you get a group of friends that buy a ton of drinks, you love to dance, you can really change the scene of a bar, you get like a little bit of stroke and pull. So with her being there behind the bar, I made friends with the owner of a local bar called Club Element. And I hopped behind the DJ booth one night and just hopped on like his regular computer, which he had a big downloaded list of illegal songs or whatever. And when my friends were dancing, I would just like click a song and then I would click the next song. Essentially, I would cue it up and I would mess with the lights and everything. And when I did it there, I thought to myself, I'm like, this would be better if like I could just do it from my own computer. That way I could download songs, I could purchase songs, I could expand my library, because I was part of the Iowa State Hip Hop Club. So I was already into dancing and music and stuff at the time. And now I was getting this itch to try something new, because it is a form of entertainment, just like professional wrestling. You get to be in front of a whole bunch of people and you get to manipulate their emotions based on what they're hearing through songs. So it started with as simple as opening up iTunes, buying a song, playing that song, fading the volume down, clicking another song, and slowly fading that volume back up. So DJ Click and Play was born in Ames, Iowa at Club Element. And I went to many a bar as far as bringing, I brought the energy that would eventually become JT Energy out through my DJing. Because when you watch someone play music or perform, I felt like if you ever see videos of DJs now, when they have like a big beat drop, the crowd matches the energy of the DJ, no matter if they're like twisting knobs or scratching or whatever they're doing. I was never a fancy DJ, but I could read a room and know how to go from one song to another to keep you on that roller coaster of emotions, just like a pro wrestling match does. So in a weird way, DJ Click and Play really helped JT Energy evolve over time. And so whenever you search DJ Click and Play, that's where that little name came from.
That's actually a good point. I mean, the ability to read the room is like the ride or die of a professional wrestler, especially for the smaller shows, just so you can, and big shows too, obviously, but sometimes it's a bit harder to do that on a larger scale. But kind of backtracking even further up that hip hop club. I am a small town boy from out in the middle of nowhere, and went to college out in the middle of nowhere in a slightly larger area. We did not have a hip hop club. So what did that entail?
So I had a friend from high school who had gone to Iowa State, and while she was attending there, I'll take it all the way back to how I really kind of got into this. So back in the day, before these sites that had the swipe left and swipe right, there was websites called like match.com. And in the early stages of match.com, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to go on match.com because I would love to meet local ladies. And at that time, you didn't pay for it or anything of that nature. It was just like a picture with a bio, and you're like, oh, cool, they live 25 miles away or 60 miles away or whatever it might be. And at that time, you also had things like MSN Messenger, Yahoo Messenger, AOL Instant Messenger. And nowadays, you might have DJ Click and Play across all your social media platforms, right? Well, at that time, you could put two and two together. The handle or name you would choose for, like Match.com, that might be your handle on something like MSN Messenger. So I thought to myself at this time, I've ran across a cute girl's picture, and she lived in Ames. And lo and behold, my math in my head, it did work out. I'm almost positive I tried to add her on like MSN Messenger, and it like popped up, and it was the same name for profiles. And I was like, oh, wow, neat. And lo and behold, kids, this is exactly how you talk nowadays. It's exactly how you talk then. And I can remember this girl invited me on a date to Pella, Iowa, where they were having a hip hop summit at the college there in Pella. And at that hip hop summit, there was a group performing called the Iowa State Hip Hop Club. And it was so small at the time. It was so grassroots. They were only like a year into their existence. But I was there, I was watching these people dance, and they weren't like crazy. It's not like on TV, so you think you can dance or anything wild like that. But it was like this small group of people, maybe like 8 to 10, who would put a couple dances together, and they showcased it there at this hip hop summit, which was showcasing anything from poetry to rapping to like drumline, stepping, all kinds of stuff. And so I was like kind of fascinated because I saw this and I was like, wow, I didn't know there's a dance thing at Iowa State. And so I told my friend who was going to Iowa State at the time, I was like, do you know anything about this? And she got some more information for me. And when they were having it was like a workshop. So you could come and you could learn a little bit of dance. And then from there, what they would do is you could come back the next week and you would learn a little bit more of the dance. And over time, you get better and better at it and you learn it over the semester. So I was living at home at this time. So if I wanted to go and get acquainted with the Iowa State Hip Hop Club, I had to drive, I want to say an hour and 10 minutes every week, at least once a week. It might have been a Sunday. So on Sundays, I would drive to Ames an hour and 10 minutes. I would go meet with my friend who I went to high school with. We go to these workshops that were put on by the Iowa State Hip Hop Club. And this is a kid not going to Iowa State. But at the time, I had intentions that that's where I wanted to go. I was currently going to Iowa Central Community College. And my first year that I joined the Iowa State Hip Hop Club, because you didn't have to be a member or a student at Iowa State University to be a part of this club, I made some new friends, which was super scary because with how small it was at the time, everybody knew each other. And here came this new kind of skinny, weird looking white kid who thought he could dance a little bit. But that's what you have to have. You have to have that amount of confidence if you're going to do something like that, because you're really jumping in feet first. And when I got my feet wet and I went through my first semester and I learned a couple dances, that's where I really fell in love head over heels with dance and the idea of not only being a part of dance, but performing dance in front of a couple hundred people. And that's another thing. If I look at my DJing hobby and my dance hobby and I put those two together, it really makes me realize how much of those two things combined help me as a human be a professional wrestler when it comes to the performing and the listening and knowing how things should flow and feel from a performing aspect and what you're doing there. So Iowa State, it went from a hip hop club that started with like 15 people. And during my time period at Iowa State and time period I lived in Ames, that thing grew to almost 500 people, where they were putting on a show in the spring and in the fall, and they would do a show at noon, 3, and 6 p.m., or maybe it was 7 p.m., but we would perform our dances that we learned 3 times at our showcase or our finale, and that day was nothing but chugging Red Bull, getting quick naps where you could. I had friends that were insane and tried to learn like 5 to 7 dances. So they were like memorizing stuff like crazy. I'd do a couple, but that's where the whole idea of getting out there and being a performer and chasing, again, something I loved and let that passion grow. So if anyone, and they still exist, the Iowa State Hip Hop Club, every year they still put on a show in the fall and in the spring to showcase the love of dance for a bunch of crazy kids that go to Iowa State who just want to have fun.
That's crazy. Go nuts, man. Especially since you got to get in kind of on the ground floor and watch it grow during those early years.
Yeah, it's nuts how many things I've jumped into in my life when they're fairly young or they're getting they're just getting started. And if you can be a part of something special kind of from the beginning or the next chapter of something and really grow with it, it brings so much more attachment to how you help evolve that thing.
And just being able to watch your career from nearly the beginning, like I've seen how some of these things, like, I don't know if it's necessarily a direct influence, and you know, I've not talked with you that much. This is like for those of you who are not who are listening to the first time, like JT and I have conversed in the past, but this is the first time we've ever like really sat down and talked with each other. Like I've mostly just talked to him in the merch line and whatnot. So it's been really neat kind of like seeing these influences and now hearing the story kind of like where like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, oh, that makes a lot of sense how you did this. Cause you've danced quite a bit over the course of your career, depending on which variation of the character you've thrown out there.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's obviously it's kind of been an upward trajectory because, you know, you started with the hip hop dance and now you are performing the music to go along with the dance. And mm-hmm. Let's face it, a good DJ is up there at least pumping his fist or doing things behind the desk as well.
Sure.
I do have to ask just more out of snark than anything, though, going back to the DJ part of it. Was there any like songs that you refuse to play? Because there's always like that, like one song like everybody wants to hear, yeah. And then like you hear it every time.
So for the length of time that I did it, there's always like some songs that a lot of songs get ruined really fast, and they don't get ruined fast for like the reason that the people ask for it. It's because when you DJ throughout the night, like let's say I would start at, I don't know, 10 p.m., but I got to go to 2 a.m. So in that time period where I'm going to be standing there playing songs for 4 hours, I'm going to at some point have waves of people coming and going. And the point of being a DJ is to play good music and keep people there. And that was always the trick, right? I want to make sure that when I see a big group of people walk in, if I see one or two people that are really excited and really dance, those are like my fundamental pillars. I have to keep those pillars there and get them set, because the people that they are with, I can tell they're not in control. It's the people that are having fun, running in, getting ready to go to the dance floor, and they'll convince their friends to stay, or the friends will be like, when they're done, we'll leave. And you can trick them to stay all night. I absolutely know you can. But there's some stuff that I would play, and then if 30 minutes later a new group walked in and the pillar of that group comes up to me and they're like, will you play blah blah blah, and I'm like, I just played it like 30 minutes ago, and they're like, oh. And it's in my brain, I don't like to repeat stuff. It would be really annoying to me. I mean, imagine if you went and watched a wrestling match and one guy always had like a default move like in a video game that you always just spam, right? It's so annoying. Like, you want it to have a lot to it, a lot of evolution, a lot of play. And so sometimes if I would play something and then 30 minutes later, someone would be like, will you play this again? I'd be so bummed out, especially if I was in like a good groove and I could feel the music and I had like 2 or 3 songs already queued up in my head where I wanted to go. But the only times I would ever deviate away from that is if I would be like, I just played it. And they'd be like, can I pay you to play it? And I would go, oh, how much? And if I felt okay, sometimes I'd do it for free. But other times, if someone would like hey, here's a 20, will you play it? I would immediately play it. I'm like, $20 to play one song? Like, even if I lose a little bit of the room, I can get them back. I know I can. Like, it's 3 minutes of my life I won't get back, but it's $20 more I'm making in that moment. But there's a lot of songs. When Lady Gaga Bad Romance came out, Bad Romance was so popular. But
that's my theme song, like, by the way. So all my cause.
Bad Romance, like, I love Lady Gaga, but it got so popular in that small time period that, like, it was like it felt like every hour I'd have a person asking for it, or some people they'd hear it and then, like, they'd be like, can you do it again? And I'd be like, no, that's like a 4+ minute song. And like, I don't want to hear that so many times. Like, it's fun, but like, don't overdo it. That's how you get burnt out on stuff and it gets annoying. But that's one that like pops up in my head. Teach Me How to Dougie. Oh my God. Teach Me How to Dougie, or like The Wobble, anything that has like the typical like white girl dance to it. Of course, we'll play it every time. Even when like Florida Georgia Line Cruise came out, that's one where it's like the stupid intro of Baby Yarva. Like, I've heard it so many times that like when I hear it, I'm just like, oh, like it brings back this trauma of these white girls running up to me drunk, holding their drinks over my laptop and me having to be like, please get back, please get back. But just like with meeting a pro wrestler, if you ever meet a DJ and you're nice and quiet and you wait, like your interaction as a fan or a person helps that person delegate how they're going to interact with you. So the nicer you are, hopefully the better experience you have, whether it's with a DJ or with a professional wrestler.
For if anyone asks me a similar question, Margaritaville has been ruined for me thanks to my stint in the supermarket. every day, twice on Saturday, and my shifts weren't long, and somehow I managed to hear it every day.
Gross.
Yeah, which I feel bad, especially after he passed, and like I had to hear it all over again. I had flashbacks, but never mind that. Do you do your own remixes? And how much have you? How much have you done?
Not a lot. So like whenever I hear a good remix of something, like someone who can take a song and completely turn it into a different genre, or take like the lyrics of a song and strip it and make it work with something totally different, like people that can make really good mashups, I have a lot of respect for. And when I can hear them put them together, like, I feel like that was the next step. If I would have committed more time and effort into DJing and not just been DJ click and play, like I would try to figure out little bits of stuff. But the way that I would do things is, like if I would have a song go and I would like pause it on something and repeat it, and then slow it down. Like, I'm playing with people's, like, they have to start listening because they know something's happening. So I would take a song and slow it down. And then I would drop the beat for the next song. And if you drop it at the right moment, it was like it was this big, because people audibly hear nothing happening for a second. So it makes people like turn their head and you have their attention for a split second. And then you start the next song and it's like, oh, here we go. So that's how I would do a lot of my mixing, is I would use that negative space where there would be nothing, and then people have to anticipate what's going to come. Kind of like when the Royal Rumble buzzer hits one and you wait for that theme music and you're like, what is it? Oh, there it is. And you explode. So that's how I did it. But I never, one of my favorite things, to check out on like TikTok right now, there's a guy called DJ Hamster Dance, and he takes lots of old retro stuff and he mixes it with new stuff. One of his things that blew up is he mixed a Chingy song with the DuckTales theme song, and it works really well. And stuff like that always pops me. It makes me just really smile ear from ear, from ear to ear, because when you can take some nostalgia and then something that's over the top, hip hop and rap, those things like work really well. And stuff like that is just really fun to me. So if anybody wants to check out fun music and mashups, check out DJ Hamster Dance on TikTok.
I only ask because I'm an avid consumer of your social media, especially in like TikTok, and then to a lesser extent, like Facebook Shorts, like to, you know, give full like credit to the music that you're using for it. And so sometimes, and it lists you as the artist rather than,
oh, sure.
Which I know, like if you're just doing whatever and you don't add any music, that they'll give credit to you for it. But it's just one of those, well, there's music playing, but it's giving credit to you. So I was just like,
yeah,
it's hobby stuff.
It's very, to me, music on social media is so funny at this point, because I don't know what time period we jumped into where all the major music mogul and companies got all butt hurt and was like, you know what, we're going to copyright everything. And if you want to make sure that you want to use our stuff, Instagram has to pay for the license. But guess what? Instagram doesn't have the same licenses that TikTok does. And TikTok doesn't have the same licenses that YouTube Reels does. And so I'll try to do something fun. And because I want to make sure I get it out to my audience, I will take a clip that I create and I will post it on TikTok, Facebook Reels, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat. I post it on everything, and the craziest part is to sit back and post the same thing in like 6 or 7 places and then see which one actually gets the best views, because it's not the same. It's not even close sometimes. And then sometimes you'll get flagged for something, or, oh, this has the music taken off, so your video has been muted. And I'm like, the video is so dumb if there's no audio with it. Like, it gets so annoying and frustrating, but that's the world of social media, because nobody wants to play together, because of course, just like Ted DiBiase said, it's all about the money. Everybody's got a price.
I use TikTok primarily just to promote this here podcast. And my videos are lazy. Like, they're just audiograms, like just the wavelength for the most part. Like, I do throw up there, like if I've been to some live event, like I'll throw something cool out there, but otherwise it's just, here's a snippet of the podcast. And one day TikTok took offense to like the language. I think I got Brad Maddoxed. I think I got like, I used like the word prick, and TikTok didn't like it.
Sure.
And so they just cut the audio off of it and let the video up. I'm like, no one's gonna want to watch that.
Why? Right. Yeah.
But then again, like I'll throw him under the bus. Nico, okay, I shouldn't say throw him under the bus. I chose to use the clip, but I have Nico Klein dropping an F-bomb, and TikTok didn't care about that.
Yeah. How wild.
That's a whole nother bag of worms there. But we really covered, you know, your music, we'll call it music career, your musical influences up to this point. How do you think that's influenced you as a wrestler, besides the crowd manipulation? How has that worked into like your character or your wrestling style?
Honestly, a lot. So one of the things that they drill into your brain real early is the fact that they want you to start thinking about your character as soon as you can. And even if you are just starting wrestling school, you really, really need to have an idea of where you're going, whether it's a heel or a babyface. And the longer I stay in this world of professional wrestling, the more that if I was going to tell someone how in depth they have to think of something as far as creating your own self-image, is find, especially like the new games, even an old game, go into a creator wrestler, like a No Mercy is a great one, because No Mercy is fairly in depth, but it's not as crazy as the new games. But even if you jump to like the brand new games, if you go by 2K23, 2K24, and you try to make yourself and go through every single thing and every single detail, and you try to tie it together to make a cohesive person that has a story that you can tell or show someone, that is how in-depth a professional wrestling character needs to be. And you should be able to show that person Or like make a creative wrestler and then give it to someone who loves pro wrestling, but they don't know who this creative wrestler is. They should be able to watch your entrance, see the colors that you wear, what your taunts, what your poses are, what your finisher is, how you get in and out of the ring, what your moveset is. That is how in depth you should think into professional wrestling. And things like dancing and DJing, those are small little things that helped me be aware of how important it is to choose the right song to come out to, whether it is copyrighted music or uncopyrighted music, because you have to be able, it's so important to pick something, especially with music. People connect so deeply through music. Because like initially when I started in SCW Pro, I chose Pony by Genuine before I was part of Vicious and Delicious. That was just my song because I knew like for the character that I was portraying, I really wanted like people to hear that bam. And like, it's one of those things where you play the first note and people that know music, they know that song instantly. And that's what a good track should be. You should be able to hear like the start of Batista's music or Randy Orton's music or Triple H's music. Like, you know it instantly and it's great. It gives you goosebumps. And dancing, you should be able to move and manipulate and know how to make your body small or make your body big, to showcase different things that happen to you in the match or in the ring, or positioning to make sure that you're safe or they're safe. So there's a lot of those aspects that I pulled from that when I talk about it in forms like podcasts over time, I really understand what was in my brain and how I utilized it over time to progress my career and progress my ever existing changes of the character of JT Energy.
And you bring up character, and that's something I definitely wanted to talk about, because, you know, over the length of your career, you've had a wide variety of characters, and actually like almost like well-defined eras within the character, giving it various nicknames and whatnot. You know, where does that, we'll start with the general of it. Like, where does that come from? What is your creative process for like starting out with like the 6-star booty and moving on to, you know, the unsolved mystery and now the feline phenom?
So I had to start with a base coat, right? I had to throw something down on the paper. You got to figure out what you want to be. And initially JT Energy was the filth you can't wash off. That was like my day one character, JT Energy. And I didn't know if I was a good guy or a bad guy. And one of the last weeks that you do at the Black and Ray Wrestling Academy is you do promo class. And you got to write down a promo, and I think you have 60 seconds to do it. And I can remember I wrote down, I tried to write like kind of a fairly risky promo. At least in my head, it was kind of risky how I was going to deliver it. And when I got up there, I have Merrick Brave and Crotch and Seth Rollins or Colby Lopez, they're all staring at me and they go, okay, are you a heel or a babyface? And I was like, I don't know. And I think Colby asked me again, he goes, what do you think your character should be? And I go, I think it should be a heel. And they go, okay, we want you to deliver it as a heel then. So I like spitting off this promo about being the filth you can't wash off. And I said something like along the lines of, and the worst part about all this is not only am I going to get into your sons and your daughter's minds, but there's nothing that you can do about it. And like, it was something fairly along the lines of like risque and grotesque. And one of my happiest moments is watching Colby like just cringe and kind of like make this sour face at what I just said to him. And I was like, perfect, this is what I'm gonna run with. I go, if I can get his emotional reaction, that's where I'll start. And I always thought of myself, I was so lucky to grow up in a time like the Attitude Era where catchphrases and mottos and nicknames were key. That's how you moved your merchandise. That's how you became a thing. And so when I thought of people like Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, The Undertaker, every X amount of months, they had a new shirt, and the new shirt had a new quote or a thing that they had evolved into. Like Triple H wasn't always just Triple H. He was the Cerebral Assassin, and then he became the Game, the Dead Man, the, like, you went from the Purple Gloves Undertaker to the American Badass to Big Evil to, like, there was always this evolution of the same person. And when I started, I knew The Filth You Can't Wash Off was something, but the first time that I changed my gear, my ultimate goal was to get in better shape. And at that time I had a fairly like kind of sexualized character. And so when I thought to myself, I'm like, I'm pretty good at squatting in the gym, and I think I have a fairly round butt. I wanted to make it something. And at the time, that was when we had Kenny Omega and Okada doing their big six-star matches over in the Tokyo Dome. And so I thought to myself, I'm like, well, if we're going to talk six-star wrestling and it's getting all this coverage, I'm going to be the six-star booty. And it's something that I did for, I don't know, less than 2 years, I think, before I tried to change it again or start to evolve it. But there's still tons of time where people will be like, oh, I remember when you were the, but they always say the five-star booty. And I get so pissed. I go, no. I go, six stars, baby.
Seven in the dome.
Yeah. So I go, I went from The Filth You Can't Wash Off to the six-star booty. And for a little bit, I tried to get over, I had a pink set of gear that had the words yummy on the butt. So I was calling myself the Yum One. I was also part of a tag team at one point called the Yum Bucks, which, you know, we had a little bit of fun with that. But when I evolved my character to the point where I was making a little bit of traction, and I got onto Monday Night Raw and I wrestled Jerry the King Lawler and I had all this awesome stuff going on. I was really on this high. Then COVID happened. And when COVID happened, I knew it was like, I told myself, I was like, this is a free reset. This is your Triple H quad injury. You get to go away. There's no wrestling. You can do whatever you want and you can reinvent yourself. And that's when I started to grow my hair out, dye it bright blonde, and really like go wild and crazy, because that's what the world was. And so when my character started to lose its mind, that's where I realized that the crazy JT energy could evolve into the unsolved mystery, because having this Mr. Gun that I had walked out with for so long, that's where I got the unique idea of saying mystery with an I instead of a Y. Also, Unsolved Mysteries had come back on Netflix. So I knew I could like do this weird thing and do this weird gimmick, because like weird is fun. People remember people like the original Mankind and Goldust and Luna Vachon, like people that you looked at and you're just like, what are you? Like, I have to tell my friend about you because I don't understand you. And that's where the Unsolved Mystery came in. But again, I hate the idea of being closed in this box. And I knew that the Unsolved Mystery had, it felt to me like it had run its course. And when I lost my SCW Pro Championship, I knew it was a perfect time for me to hit the reset button and go from this good guy, JT Energy, who had been just having fun, being laid back, but also being himself. And when I lost my most prized possession, right back off the deep end again, except this time deeper, darker, further, and taking more elements of who I am, like my love for my cats, my love for my wife, the idea of expanding the way that I think or see into the world of tarot cards, taking all that and saying, where do I draw my power from? The thing that I love, which is cats. And that's where I became not just the phenom, but the feline phenom. And so when you come see JT Energy now, he started as the Filth You Can't Wash Off, the guy who would shake his hips and be over-sexualized. Now he's the guy the guy that's covered from head to toe. You don't get to see an ounce of his body, and he's got contacts in that look like cats, and he's got a choker on or a collar on that says energy. If you would have seen me at the start, you would have been like, who or what is that? And if you come see me now, I hope you say the same thing, go, who or what is that?
Yeah, and I will say, like, the latest transformation, like, it blew me out of the water, because that it was just out of nowhere. Like, it was this compared to like certain gimmick changes where it's quasi evolutionary, like, you just went like 0 to 60 on it. Like, you like yes, you've added more and more, you know, bits of clothing to it, but like, it seemed like almost immediately you went from, you know, slapping hands and kissing babies to all, you know.
Well,
now I'm praising cats.
If you go back in, if you look at the anniversary event where it was the triple threat between Joesa and the Devil Dog and myself, I had my own fun, unique look for that event. And when I lost that night, at that time, I was wearing like, I had gold leggings with my regular kind of butcher body suit that I was rocking. And up top, I didn't really have anything. I would have my like my wristband, sometimes my elbow pads. But if you go from that event and then you look at the very next one where I competed at, in Iowa City, and I had a rematch for my championship against Mosley. The very next event, if you go back and you see any pictures or anything, instead of just having my legs covered in gold, now my upper body was covered in gold too. So going from the leggings to evolving into a bodysuit, that was step one. That's where I took away the first thing. And the next event, all of a sudden, the bodysuit had evolved, and I had a black version of a bodysuit. And then if the next version you went to that, I had this other, like, it was almost like a, it looks like a celestial planet surface bodysuit. And then all of a sudden, I think the thing that really started to set people over the top is when the collar came out. And then all of a sudden I had these contacts in, and people were like, you only got to do one or two things to you. And I have a third eye that I put on my forehead, and it only took a couple things and taking a couple creepy pictures with my iPhone and putting it out there. And then all of a sudden people are like, what happened, and how did it happen, and why did it happen so drastically, so quickly? But I really wanted to put over the power of being on the mountaintop. And then when you get thrown off that mountaintop and you have to start from the very bottom, where you don't feel like being the guy that was slapping hands and doing all the good guy stuff, it's all fun and it was great. But when it all gets ripped out of your hands and you have to start from square one, it's real easy to look around and be like, it doesn't matter what I was doing, because it wasn't working. And if I need to get back to the promised land, I'm going to bet on myself, and I'm not going to play the same hand I've been laying down for the past year. I'm going to try something completely different and see where it takes me.
Well, sooner than later, it's going to take you to the top. Let's be realistic about it. As I said at the top of the show, like, you are a Grand Slam champion. And so I do feel like, you know, it's a setback, and now you've been a little bit distracted with the iceberg, Dion Roosman, at present time. But, you know, icebergs melt eventually in this climate, so it's yes, just a matter of time. And actually, you know, if you ask me, I also think that you should have won the Iowa championship, because I'm pretty sure I heard the Cowboy quit.
The Cowboy got real lucky. Not many people get locked into the breath taker and can stand for more than a second or two. But if anybody sees me ever lock that move in on people, there's really two steps to it. Not only do I have to hook them and turn them, but once I have you turned, that's the initial start of the pain. The part that is a for sure, almost guaranteed every time, is when I start to sit down, a la Chris Jericho, early WCW Monday Nitro, bending people like Juventud Guerrera in half and stealing their masks. That's where I got a lot of my inspiration for the breath taker from.
Well, so, and just to, yeah, cutting you off on that, like,
no, you're fine.
Like that was something like, like I put two and two together, just being an old man and watching, like, he's gone feline and now he's using the lion tamer.
Yeah, so, yeah, there you go. Using there
the Boston crab, like he's going all out with the feline. So,
and the only person that I can say that when I've locked it in fully that actually survived that thing was the devil dog, but. He may have survived it, but one of my absolute favorite pictures from this year is just his contorted body in my hands with me ripping at his beard while I have him locked in it. And he looks so helpless. So even if I lost my championship, I still have his dignity in that picture because he looks like he's being completely manhandled.
There you go. And that feud was amazing because that lasted nearly a full year. Within the confines of SCW.
Absolutely. So yeah. he won the 2023 Prestige Rumble by eliminating Joesa. And we took that story all the way to Prestige 2024, where we went from the night that he won the Rumble and I won the championship to the night where he was defending the championship against me. And then lo and behold, now he has to deal with Mason Beck, who won the Rumble.
That's going to be another tough hill for him to climb. I can try to talk to Mason about that, or talk to the devil dog. I got you right now. So that being said, you know, you've held all the titles, and like, obviously, you know, the goal is always to be on top, but what's left for you to accomplish in SCW Pro?
Well, there is a couple surefire things that I would like to knock off my bucket list when it comes to SCW Pro. So, one of the things that always sticks with me, and I only get one shot a year to do it, is I have never, ever won the Prestige Rumble. And being a fan of professional wrestling and falling in love with something like the Royal Rumble, when I got to be a part of a company that had their own smaller version of it, it is something where this past year, I was in a championship match, couldn't be in the Rumble. Year before that, championship match, couldn't be in the Rumble. I don't even know if we had one the year before that. It's been this ever evolving thing where I've only had a couple opportunities to be in it in this time period, and I haven't had my showcasing performance. I haven't had that moment that I've been chasing by winning that and having my opportunity to face a champion at Epic, essentially SCW's WrestleMania. I've done everything getting to where I wanted to be, but I've never had that small little story that I've wanted to tell. And so, being someone who's done pretty much absolutely everything when it comes to, I pride myself on holding every single championship SCW Pro has to offer. When they put the year-end awards out, I pride myself on having the match of the year, the tag team of the year, the rookie of the year, the superstar of the year, any and all the oh my God moment of the year. When it comes to SCW, I'll put my foot down. I know I'm trying to be a big fish in a small pond, but I pride myself on that pond that I swim in. And when it comes to Iowa, and it's wrestling scene, I want to be one of the ones that people talk about for a long, long time. So the Prestige Rumble, it is on my bucket list. I want it. I need it. It fiends me. Even at this point right now, I'm not the champion or have a championship, but the better I do, the more opportunity I know I am guaranteeing my spot in the next Prestige Rumble. Going forward, there's no physical championships that I need to attain at this point. I probably never regain a victory over Merrick Brave. Unfortunately, our match at Epic 2022, he did beat me for the Iowa championship and probably one of the best matches I've ever had in my career. And we did win match of the year voted on by the SCW Pro fans, but I'll probably never get that victory back. Unfortunately, Merrick Brave's body is such an ever changing, evolving thing that pro wrestling in ring on a regular basis, I think might be out of his realm that he wants to pursue, because he already did so many things before it even got to me or some of the people that are in SCW Pro now. But I don't know. There's a little itty bitty piece and part of me that kind of wants one more tag team championship reign, because Vicious and Delicious, we did it 3 times. And I want to say that ties the record for most reigns, but that's by Bobby Dahl. But Bobby Dahl did it with 3 other people. I don't think he had consistent people. So I really wanted to do it as Vicious and Delicious 4 times, because then we would have been the absolute greatest tag team in SCW Pro history, which we already probably are. But if I could get one more, then it's solidified that that's absolutely me. At some point, I really want a steel cage match in SCW Pro. The only steel cage match in history, I want to say, was between Merrick Brave and Shane Hollister. And there's been a lot of cage matches in Iowa over the past couple of years. There's a lot more availability to cages, and that's kind of a culmination of a feud. I would love to have it Iowa City or Bluegrass, either way, like that would be something on my bucket list. But at this point, the thing that I should, would, and will focus on is Dion Roosman. He is my immediate bucket list item. And it, the funny thing is, it's not even if people go, well, what are you fighting for? We're fighting for pride at this moment, because Dion, was it 2 years ago? He's the one that won the Prestige Rumble. And when I talked about it and I thought about it just a little bit ago, it kind of put some salt in the wound. I go, that's really annoying that he won that. And he went on to Epic, actually the night that Merrick Brave beat me, and we had our match of the year for the Iowa Championship. He fought Johnny Wisdom, and he won his SCW Pro Championship, which, unfortunately for him, his knees have exploded, one and then the other, and he's reconstructed them, which, based on our last match, I think he has some springs that he has put into his legs during surgery, because he flew about 50 rows back.
He took out someone in the crowd.
Thank God it wasn't me. I looked up because I was going to punch him in the face, and he flew right over me. But he is my immediate concern. He's just mad because he thought he had the match won, and I pulled the referee out. I can't help that I get my jollies off of watching other people have things ripped from their hands. And the beautiful thing is, Dion's his little nieces that he is married into, Dion's wedding was actually 1 week before my wedding. So we also have this thing where we had like our love come at the same time for our wives that we have now, and now we're fighting for our families here. And I don't want to be showcased or one-upped in any scenario. I'm very happy for Dion, but I also am annoyed by his existence for what he's done around me in this last year. So when it really annoys him, because his little nieces come up to my merch table and they talk to JT Energy, and they get mad at me because I'm beating up Dion, and I slowly lure them in and let them know how much more fun it is to be a part of the Feline Phenoms fan club instead of, oh, boring old Iceberg City across the way. Let's get cold. He did put up an entertaining TikTok where he speared a snowman, but I believe that was his wife's idea, not his.
And it went on entirely too long, by the way.
He did a lot of running for no reason.
Yeah, he like went like a minute and a half of running.
He wanted to get cardio in and show you.
Yeah. I mean, it was impressing. I know he's better at cardio than me. Like, I'm winded here taking a drink out of my water.
Well, but either way, when it comes down to this, that's a small short list of what I have on the agenda, hopefully in the near future of my SCW Pro career. Because I don't know, life's always changing and professional wrestling's always evolving and changing. So I keep a couple things in my head of what I'd like to do, what I'd like to perform, how I'd like to be perceived. But right now, with the ever-evolving feline phenom, because I feel like if I talk in like Paul Heyman terms and he goes, we're just in the third inning, baby. That's how it really feels with the feline phenom. I feel like we are in the very early stages of where this character can and will go when it comes to SCW Pro. Because at this point, I have a feeling at some point I will be back in the SCW Pro championship picture. And being able, I got my championship win as the babyface who defeated Connor Braxton at the last event in the Walcott Coliseum, which opened the show at fire code capacity. And I had one of the moments of my career. But to live on the other side of that spectrum and have someone like a Devil Dog or a Dion Roosman or a Corn Boy hold that championship that they are so excited and proud to hold, and then just cheat and rip it from them and watch them cry, that's a whole nother level of excitement that I'm excited to live through someday.
Rudo to the core, man. All right. Since we're bringing up, we brought up names, and I want to backtrack a little bit. But you mentioned Merrick Brave, your trainer, and you've gotten to work with him, losing your Iowa championship. Mm-hmm. But you also got brought in with him pretty early in your career in SCW as well. Did you guys have a formal name for that entourage? That part's failing me.
Styling and defiling. Vicious and Delicious teamed up with the fashionista Merrick Brave to become Styling and Defiling. And don't ever forget that when me and Merrick Brave had our battle at Hulkamania Epic Night 2, he did not wrestle as Merrick Brave. He wrestled as the fashionista Merrick Brave and came to cleanse the closet of his former demons that he had created, which was myself and my newfound cohort was Augusta Straven as part of the Miss Knight Society at that time. But yes, in the early days, Merrick Brave was extremely smart. He was creating his own little bloodline and making, having two heaters with him that could help him lie, cheat, steal, and keep his SCW Pro Championship around his waist. But the funny thing is, the man that I beat for the SCW Pro Championship was the man that beat him for the SCW Pro Championship, and Connor Braxton, with our big first event that we ever hosted in the Call Ballroom. They had their main event match, where the funny thing was, in that match, Merrick Brave went down and the referee went down, and Connor Braxton looked like he had everything in just where he wanted. And I run down I had like these little tight black booty shorts on, and I had a referee shirt all tied up, and I came down in my 1996 Shawn Michaels moment, and I hit the one, the two, and then before I could hit three, out of nowhere, Shane Hollister grabbed my arm, picked me up, kicked me in the back of the head, and I went down. And then shortly thereafter, unfortunately, Merrick Brave got the 1-2-3 counted on him, and we had a new SCW Pro Champion in Connor Braxton that night.
Being a Merrick Brave trainee, like, how does that feel to be able to, you know, work that closely with your trainer, both on the same side and on the other side of the aisle, as well as opponents?
I love it. When you can work with someone who essentially... what I do, like when I do a podcast, I'm dumping everything that's in my head for people to listen to and hopefully learn from. When I went to the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy, that's what he did every single day. And he taught us those fundamentals. And he teaches you the fundamentals so you have this blank canvas in your head, so that way he knows what you know. But when you get into wrestling, there's a psychology to it, which is all about the crowd and how you perform and what you do at the speed that you do it at. And he's so good at it that I was so, like, I knew we could convey a story that would blow people away. And he knew that too. And when you can get two people together, they're so determined to put something together that could be a match of the year candidate, that's where you really have some fun. And even if I look at the matches I had with Crotch, some of my greatest rivalries and greatest stories I've ever lived through and told were with Crotch. And it's because I was able to have so much fun and take someone who is so excited and analytical on how they see things and how they perceive it over different events to eventually get to an end goal that we get our perfect culmination from. And so when you go out there, whether it's a one-time singles match or you get to work a program that's going to go over a full year, you got to think about that. What have I done? What's the end goal? How do I get there? How do I maximize the efficiency of what I want to get out of this? And if I had fun with Crotch or Matt Mayday, and I had a lot of fun with Merrick Brave, the idea, like, I don't, the amount of stuff I know I could sit back and learn by doing nothing, by squaring off against someone with the ring general abilities of like a Seth Rollins is like outstanding to me. Like, I can't imagine being able to get in front of, even on like a house show over in Moline at the Mark, if you were just there in front of a couple thousand people, small show, and knowing nothing, but just listening to someone as smart as Seth Rollins say, do this, do that, go there, do this. And then listening to the crowd as it all happens and be like, wow, that's so amazing to know that you can paint a picture so easily by just listening and knowing how you can do so much and get an ultimate end result in 15 minutes. So that's kind of the fun thing to me. I know the last house show I went to in Illinois, it was Seth Rollins against Austin Theory for the United States Championship in the main event. And just watching him work and watching the crowd in like a house show, you never think the championship's going to change hands. And with Theory being the United States champion, I'm like, I don't really think Seth's going to take the championship, but let's see how much he can make me believe tonight. And the near falls and the things that were so deep in the match, it was just wild to me that you can have so much fun just by sitting back and letting pro wrestling take over your emotions and your soul and just believing everything and just being a little kid. That's the worst part about pro wrestling, is when you want to be an adult and you want to get analytical instead of just watching and letting your emotions run through. And I'm lucky that I still feel that, because even when I go to a pro wrestling show, a couple weeks ago, I helped out at Dreamwave and I got to sit back and watch the show. There's so many times in that night where I was just overtaken with emotion. I was screaming like I was a fan because it was so much fun, because I love pro wrestling so much.
And just to put over Dreamwave, Dreamwave is a great place to do it. They pack the house, and I'm slow on the uptake, and so I never get tickets in a timely manner, and so I have to just watch it on IWTV.
And that was my first Dreamwave show I've ever been to in the entire time I've been in the Quad Cities, and it was awesome.
I love it. Dude, we've been talking for a long time, but I do want to cover, and there's so much more we could cover, but
I told you I'm a talker.
Oh, and I said, you know, I can have you back on, like, there's still the list. Yeah. But I also like to respect other people's time. And like, I as a podcast listener, like, once we start hitting that hour mark, I personally start losing, like, even if it was really cool, I kind of, I got to get out of the car now But I do like want to finish up on a couple of questions, and if that takes another half hour, so be it. I don't care that much. It's my show. I'm a professional neck beard. Let's do this. It's kind of it'll start as a joke, and then it'll lead to a better, like, real questions. I punch.
Okay.
I am friends with the Card Subject to Change boys. For those of you not aware, it's a Quad City adjacent podcast. The boy, those guys run a good show, and big SCW Pro fans as well. Whose idea was it to pop in and do a review HLA with them?
Oh, that was me. That was me, baby. Initially, on my second appearance on the show, we did a watch along with a 1995 Superstars taping. It might have been a 96 Superstars taping. Either way, it was the first event that I ever went to in Iowa when I moved here as a little kid. So I wanted to review one of the episodes because they taped a couple weeks worth of Superstars. So we watched it and we reviewed it and had some fun. And at the end of that episode, I was like, in my head, I'm like, I've been to tons of wrestling events. Let's record another one that I've been to that lots of people know is infamous for one thing, and that is HLA. And so it made it such an easy end game to come back to the Card Subject to Change podcast, have something that we could review again, because I love talking wrestling, but I also love the idea of talking about wrestling and things that I got to live through, and then rewatching the show with a different analytical eye and talking about it with other people. So it's fun to go back and revisit those events, or those matches that you got to live through and be like, I can't believe I got to witness this and see it in this infamous moment that lived in history. Mm-hmm. So HLA was all on me, because not only did I know that a lot of people know what it is, but hopefully that would get people to tune in to listen to see what the boys would or would not talk about.
Oh, that's actually cool. You got to be there for that. Like, yeah. I take that back. Like, I got to see the debut of Great Khali. So, okay. I don't know if that's on par with HLA,
if anybody, one of the things I'm doing, I love going back and looking through things I've lived through. I'm really a stickler for that. I don't want to forget things that I've lived through in my life. I like them to pop up and always remember them. So any ticket stub I ever had or event I went to, I have found the main event for that show, and I've created my own YouTube playlist that I can go through and look at of all the main events I've ever got to witness, where I've seen things of John Cena versus Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle. Like, it's fun to remember those things. Like, I got to do WWE extra work the night that Kevin Owens came out as Stone Cold Steve Austin and tricked the entire Chicago crowd. It was one of the greatest moments of being backstage somewhere. Like, I just do it to pop myself. And if you ever go on my YouTube page and you go through my playlist, you can see one called Main Events. And those are all events that I've been to that you can see in WWE or AEW main event that I got to be there and witness.
Oh, that's actually really cool. You hit me in the heart though with like the ticket stub, and that's like one of those things like I miss in this day and age of digital or whatnot, is like so few companies do a proper ticket stub anymore. Like, maybe, yeah, I can save the email with the the QC code or whatever.
I think you can. I think a lot of times it's an option now. It's an additional fee, but you can request a physical ticket for events, because a lot of people do it for collecting purposes. I know a lot of people, if I bring up someone who I would like to face in an SCW Pro ring, someone like Caitlin Clark, her just recent game where she broke the NCAA women's division record, there was people that immediately they took their ticket stub, they had her autograph it, they threw it up online, and they sold it for a couple thousand dollars, because it will live in infamy forever.
I'm nerding out at the moment about that, but here we go. For those of you, no one gets to see this because it's an audio podcast, but like, here is my book folder of,
yeah,
like all, a bunch of old ticket stubs, and like, yeah, actually one autograph that I haven't switched over to its other book yet.
Yeah. So I found at one point at my mom and dad's house, I had a big stack of ticket stubs, and I started going through that, the concerts and the wrestling events, just to see like where I was, why I was there, who it was, because same thing with like bands, you can't remember the bands that opened. And then I went back and I looked, and I'm like, oh, I did see that band. That's so cool. But I strongly suggest, if you are a wrestling fan, if you've gone to those wrestling events, just look stuff up, like look up all the matches you got to see, try to remember what merchandise item you bought from the table that night. Do you still have that shirt? Because nostalgia hits hard. Like that first event that you went to, like maybe you didn't buy that Triple H and Shawn Michaels second reincarnation of DX t-shirt, but now you're a human that has more money and you think to yourself, you know what? I do want that vintage t-shirt. I'm going to get that for myself now, because I couldn't at that time, but it's my time and I'm going to get it.
We went to nostalgia, and I was just going to use this to book into your new segment with the part of the Card Subject to Change boys, A Moment of Focus. So how did that come into play?
Well, that's just your boy JT Energy, the feline phenom, trying to think to himself, like, what's another evolution of his character? What's another thing that he can make sure that he gets in front of pro wrestling fans, especially local ones, on a regular basis? Well, how about you pitch yourself on becoming a brand new segment on a regular podcast. So not only do you have to worry about posting to your own social media, but you're going to add another thing into your life. So that way people can constantly be reminded of JT Energy. Because if you are doing, if you feel like you're doing too much, you're probably still not doing enough, because the Quad Cities is a really big place and the SCW Pro events are packed, and I want them to stay packed. And when it comes to our small locker room, I'm not tooting my own horn here, but if everybody put as much effort into talking about their career as some people do, it would feel like the entire locker room lived, breathed, and died professional wrestling. Even if it's not just that, just your normal life. And some people, social media is not for them. It's not what they live and breathe and die by, but that's the day and age that we live in. And one of the things that I think to myself is, at some point, whether it's in my control or not, when I'm gone, I want people to be able to think, ah, man, I remember Travis Horn. I remember JT Energy. I want to go to the internet and I want to just type in his name and see what comes up. And I want my digital footprint to be huge. I want people to be able to see and scour the internet and be lost in hours of footage and podcasts and matches and promos and videos and all kinds of stuff. So that way it really felt like I cultivated what I wanted out of this pro wrestling career and this life that I've been given.
Oh, well, if you're looking to be a professional wrestler full time and you don't have the luxury of WWE and AEW, TNA, you know, insert any of the larger company contract that's going to pay you, you know, a good living, like you gotta have that hustle. And it kind of surprises me at times to see some of the wrestlers that don't utilize social media. And like, don't get wrong, I actually hate social media, but I'm out there tweeting stupid stuff, not as much as you, but that's part of the yeah. if you're serious about it, like that's almost part of the, that has to be part of the job now, because
you gotta practice what you preach. And professionalism on the professional wrestling game doesn't only come in the gym or in the ring or in training or on social media. You got to be always working and evolving all the time. So the little videos that you see me make and pictures that I put together, like I have free time, so I'm working on creating content, because that's what people do. They sit on their phones and they scroll, they have their lunch hour, they're looking stuff up. I mean, it's what can you do to grab someone's attention to make them think two Saturdays from now an event's coming up, I do want to spend $10 and take 3 hours out of my night to hopefully have a good time. And when you are working collectively as a team to not only get people to this event, but to the next event, that's how you become successful. And if those people know JT Energy, then maybe that night I walk away with an extra $100 to $200 more, because I made those moments and those fans want to interact with me and buy my merchandise, whether I was good or bad. And there's someone sitting next to me who made $5 because they don't know what to do yet. And the game of professional wrestling is making money and getting your name and cultivating your image to become bigger, better, and badder, whether it's in your small local area or on a grand global scale.
Exactly. And I think one of the more interesting ways to do it outside of just the straight up character work is your weekly vlogs. I find those, you know, really neat. And then as someone who attends the SCW Pro shows, it's always kind of neat to see, like, okay, like I watched this live. I was there for that. And then seeing like your point of view, or watching like you get ready for it, or, you know, your thoughts and feelings as you're sitting in the car, getting ready to walk into the Bluegrass Coliseum or wherever you happen to be that night. Like I find that really interesting.
It's just another one of those things where if I asked myself, is there anyone around here doing anything like this right now? I don't think so. I don't think there's anyone that is making the effort to find an uncomfortable scenario and then sit in the uncomfortable scenario for a while, because that's what you have to do. Just like with pro wrestling, I didn't know how to do this, so I just started to learn, and eventually you get better. And if you start taking videos and like if you can find your favorite YouTuber, Twitch streamer, any of that stuff, like, just see what makes them successful. See what you like. Put it out there. If I get 17 views or 1700 views, that's more than zero. And those people hopefully enjoyed the time that they spent to watch it. So if I can be funny or get a backstage interview or just give you a behind the scenes different look, like I look at people like the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast, Matt Cardona and Kurt Hawkins and Mark Sterling, in the content that they create, and someone like All Ego, Ethan Page. Those people have an awesome YouTube following and the different little things that they do. And it's because they not only have their pro wrestling career, but they have their embodiment of who they are. And then they give it to their fans to make you feel like you're not only getting the person that's in the ring, but then you get a different person outside the ring and you get to mesh those two worlds together. So if I'm on Instagram doing a WWE or AEW card break, where people can watch me open wrestling cards and talk about different stuff, it's just another thing that I'm doing for like an hour on a weeknight where people can tune in and be like, oh, I wonder what JT Energy is doing. This is weird. This is fun. And it's another talking point where if someone comes up to me at the merch stand, they go, I saw you on Instagram Live. What was that all about? Like, it's just me trying to try different things to see where the local fan base and where my hobbies, where they come together to see if there's anything that can make me more successful.
Well, now I was spinning off again just by saying like we should wind things down. But speaking of like the Instagram and like the card pulls and stuff, you've started doing daily tarot. How did that come about?
That is all about. I feel like over the last couple of years, I've seen just like a lot of girls got really into crystals and really into tarot cards. I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden it kind of got popular.
Oh, and it's big in the Quad Cities too.
Actually. Yeah. There's a lot of people that, they feel like they're little witches running around, and nothing against tarot, nothing against witches or whatever you want to be.
You just lost my wife right there.
But I thought to myself, like, if I get my wife's car right now on her dash, she has her little bed of like rocks and whatever, and it's hers. I don't care. She reads books that are full of fantasy and lore and all kinds of fun stuff. It's who she is and who she wants. And I thought to myself, what's another way that I can expand myself that is also something that would make people uncomfortable? And I think tarot is weird to a lot of people. It's like going to a psychic or a medium or something. Like, the cards can tell your future, right? Like, a lot of people are like, you're trying to sell me snake oil on this one. It doesn't really work. But I think I've done it for like maybe like 200 days at this point, maybe less than that. But it's fun to wake up every day as a Capricorn, check my tarot card, see what my reading is. And I always read the little blurb at the bottom. I don't pull it and I post it and then be done with it. It's not just some fake thing at this point. It gives me life introspective. It allows me to read a little paragraph and see how that actually relates to my life. And then allows me to go, how am I going to insert that into my day? How does this actually help me dictate how I think about today or my future or my past and how they affect who I am right now? So when it came to it at the time, I just thought, I don't know what this is really about, but my last design that I had made is me with my Mr. Gun shooting a three-headed monster that I had taken all three of my cats. And instead of having it be like a three-headed dog, I turned it into a three-headed cat monster that I was fighting. And that looked like a tarot card that at the bottom, it said the energy. And I really wanted to take that feeling, and that helped me also evolve into the feline phenom. Because once I did that, I realized this is really weird and people think it's probably really weird and they won't get it. But when this design eventually helps me evolve into the feline phenom, they will get that, like, my love of my cats and how much I adore them isn't just like a cute, weird thing. It's like, I love cats. I'm a cat guy, and it's who I am becoming and showing the world, and I don't care if they like it or not.
Merch idea. I mean, it might cost a little too much. You get your own JT Energy tarot decks.
I've looked into custom tarot decks. I have. It's bit every now and then. When it comes to merchandise, I really gotta have like a, I gotta have an urge to like hop on it and see how easy it is. And if a website makes something easy, that's great, because I wouldn't even mind getting a regular tarot deck, but the logo on the top of every tarot card is my logo. So that way you could have your own custom regular tarot deck that's JT Energy, like authenticated essentially. But that's a merchandise item. It might be a premium price item, but it could be coming in the future. You never know.
There you go. I guess if nothing else, you could just be like Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, where they were notorious, especially down south. It was just like they would just take random objects and just and roll, and then $10 here. Get your own tarot deck and just autograph it.
That's how Matt Cardona is. He signs something and he autographs it, and somebody is absolutely more than willing to buy it, because why not? It's one of a kind.
Yeah. Well, and again, hustling on the indies, man. You got to do something to stand out, and selling your own tarot, that's better than getting like a Jared Thumb koozie, I guess.
I gotta be pretty careful though. I try not to step too much on the realm or toes of our own regional witch that we have here. So I do be careful, because I don't know the powers that she do or do not be having, and I don't want any of that bad juju on me.
Even if it's not the juju, those pounces are wicked. Miss McKenna.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I felt bad because I didn't think about that. But she hasn't been booked on the SCW shows in a bit.
She's expanding.
She's everywhere else though.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I can't. Like, that's more of a selfish. I feel bad that I don't see her.
But you never know. Maybe a 2024 feud that everybody doesn't know that they want is the good witch versus the bad cat, the feline phenom against Kaia McKenna.
I'd pay to see it, but like, let's face it, like right now I have the most expensive seats in the house.
Yeah.
When I show up. But okay. Hey, it's like 20 minutes ago, I said we were winding things down. And so I am going to end it on the same question I asked like all the other SCW pro guys. So say for whatever reason, I'm allowed in the ring. I'm 40, out of shape, no wrestling training whatsoever. Or there's going to be an open challenge from anyone in the SCW Pro locker room. Who can I take? Who would I win in that battle?
Oh, man. Who could you take? What are skills that you bring to the table? Are you wearing your glasses?
I probably should.
Okay.
But I don't have to. I can go Stan Hansen on people. I can just take off my glasses and just swing.
Well, if I put you in there with a baby face, maybe they won't hit you in the face because they're good guys. Maybe they'll hesitate, and that'll give you an opportunity. But if I put you in there with a bad guy, you might have to swing for the fences. And if you don't land the first one, you might be done for. You know what? When it comes down to podcasts, and it comes down to the SCW Pro locker room, there's only one person around here that I want to bury, and that is my favorite person to bury, Jared Thumb. And I think Jared would walk out, the soon-to-be family man that he is, father, and when he steps into the ring, he's going to say, "Don't make me do this. Keep your glasses on, step one." Jared, nope. Go ahead and get out of the ring. He'd try to be the nice guy. He'd try to be like Bret Hart in 95, right? He's just too good of a guy. Well, you could easily be like Owen. And when Jared wasn't looking, all he's got to do, turn around, kick him below the belt one time, pin him 1, 2, 3. He's absolutely dumb enough to fall for that. He is a great guy, and he hits everybody with the stunner and the thumb drive. But one too many thumb drives, one too many beers, and from coming from Muscatine, unfortunately, Jared Thumb's going to be losing this one.
No, the weird thing is like, that's kind of how ignoring the glasses part of it, like, that's kind of how I figured, like, I'm not low-blowing someone.
But once,
like,
you get the 1, 2, 3, you run.
I'll run. No,
it's... You go right to your car and you're done.
No, I mean, to be fair, that's the outcome of any fight I have in SCP.
Yeah, there you go. You got to bank on hopefully that working one time. Just like Nakamura on your t-shirt. You treat him just like AJ Styles. Just boom, right below the belt, baby.
Like, he's going to be up. He's going to be around, you know, doing the thumb thing, and then field goal and run away. But add that to the list. Like, I'm slowly, like, everyone's like choosing someone different. I've yet to have someone be listed twice.
Yeah, so you get Jared, Jared Thumb on here. Let's see what he says.
All right. But JT, we're ending for real this time. Thank you for coming on the show. Course. It's been great. We have talked for, according to the recording doodad, 122 minutes now, which is 20 minutes over what I said I'd do for you. And we did it. Honestly, we barely scratched the surface of some of the other stuff we could have talked about. Like, again, with your, like, we just talked about CW Pro. We didn't really talk about your journeys elsewhere in Iowa, your extra work, getting to work with Jerry the King Lawler, for that matter, as well.
We got to have a part two.
There we go.
That's what I am with podcasts.
There we go. Just make the rounds.
I'm the part two king.
Or we can make it. We can just start having you on. You can have your own segment. Now, I got a mobile unit now, so I can just show up at SCW Pro and just stick a mic in your face, and you can rattle on for 5 minutes.
I'll give you a soundbite every time you come out to the show.
There we go. But again, I appreciate it. And for those of you at home, like, SCW Pro is the best kept secret in Eastern Iowa. If you are in the area, come out. It's a great show. And I'm not just saying this because I happen to sponsor a lot of SCW Pro events either. So, but come see the feline phenom JT Energy and the rest of the crowd. And JT, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on my very first episode, but not last episode, of the MLW Con Fusion podcast. First and foremost, make sure next time you see your wife, tell her I say hello, and that next time you guys come out to an SCW Pro show, you get your own picture with the feline phenom JT Energy to go on the wall at home. And if you would, always go to the places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, anywhere that you can type in the words JT Energy or DJ Click and Play. Follow, support, comment, like, love, subscribe, do anything and everything you can. If you've already done all that, just hit the share button. Show someone how weird you really are and the people that you follow, like me. And then if you want to, and you got 20, 30, 40 extra bucks in your pocket or your bank account, prowrestlingtees.com/JT Energy, buy one or every single one of my t-shirts, all like 20 of them I've put up there. And also, be weird when you go out in public. That's what I offer. Thank you for allowing me to be here and being the weird guy that I am.
MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and is hosted on Spotify for Podcasters. MLW Confusion is part of the Urban Wrestling Network. You can check out the Major League Pod, amongst other shows, on YouTube at Urban Wrestling NW. The background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review is also helpful, as word of mouth advertisement is very important for small podcasts such as this. My social media links can be found in the description below, but Twitter and Instagram are at The Nova of Cass, TheNovaOfCass. And Facebook is at MLW Confusion, all one word. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual tip jar at www.kofi.com/Casanova. If you prefer more bang for your buck, you can go to patreon.com/Casanova, where for as little as $2, backers get access to the podcast early and ad-free, plus other weekly exclusive content such as athome.exe, the Patreon exclusive podcast. So, join the crew that is headed up by Keith Wynn, Alan Schroeder, Alex McCarthy, and the False Prophet, and check it all out. You can also find t-shirts, coffee mugs, and other merch at the Confusion Podcast store on Teespring.
For business inquiries such as ads and sponsorships, please email at rzkammerer, that's K-A-M-E-R-E-R, @comcast.net. Thank you all for listening.